So we're glad that you're here today. This is a special day. Anytime we see folks go public with their faith, and if you're here today as a guest of Big John or Madison, thank you so much for being here. I know it means the world to them that you are part of this, and we are blessed to have you here today. We've been in a series we're going to conclude today. We've been calling it Endless Possibilities, and simply it's one of those motivational types of series talking about the things that we can accomplish or God can accomplish through us. And we also tried to get rid of some myths, too. We started off the first week, about 4 weeks ago, with the idea of the principle of the path, the foundation that is set. And then we talked about the next week about potential and what it is and really what it isn't. And then we talked about passion last week. And all these are on our website at cornerstonechurchct.com. And you can listen to them if you'd like to, along with the many others that we had over the year archived there. But today we're going to talk about preparation. And anybody who wants to achieve their goals in life, you got to have a passion for it, obviously. And nobody does anything for long term without a passion for it. You got to evaluate your potential, but also understand that sometimes what you think is your potential, like you have the right resources or enough money or those things there, may not be it. We proved that with Moses, how that God took away everything he could possibly consider a resource to make him successful, and God got him stripped down to just him and God, and that's when he actually became successful and he was able to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. And then we talked about, you know, passion, obviously, and we talked about the foundation, how that you need to take the time and set up a good foundation for what you want to achieve. And all this has to do with the spiritual part of it, not just the secular part of it. Although I have found that success usually works secular and spiritual together. And I've learned from a lot of great leaders and a lot of great authors that can be able to blend the two together. You don't necessarily have to be a Christian to be able to understand the Christian principles and live by some of those. And we've covered a lot of territory so far. But today we're going to talk about preparation. Now, there are a lot of different preparations that we need to consider when we're trying to get to what's possible in our lives, and I've listed some of them. They're going to be on the screen in just a second here. We have one TV working. We got one out. It's always that day, you know, with electronics and stuff, but at least we have the one there. And I want to kind of give you what these personal preparations are. And the first one I want to talk about real quick here as we start this off is the personal preparation. Anytime you're going to be able to achieve what God wants for your life and what can happen in your life, you have to have personal preparation. You have to put some effort into it. Sometimes it looks like a lot of hard work. We tell our students that, you know, the reason why you go to school is not just because mom and dad want you out of the house, although that is a perk. You go to school because they want to see you learn the basics. And really, it's not just about learning the basics. It's about learning how to learn. That's what school is really all about, because we ought to all be lifelong learners. And I've encouraged my kids when they were growing up, and I've encouraged my grandkids in school now, and I got one grandchild that basically in, what, 2.5 years will graduate from high school, and I look forward to my kids coming to me and saying, could you help with college? You know, we're waiting for that bill to come in. But we tell them that you need to prepare yourself, and even if you're an adult, you know, I've learned that many times adults will change careers 3 or 4 times in their lifetime. And each time there has to be some preparation for that, so personal preparation. The next one real quick here is lifelong preparation. And what that is basically is that is things that start from the beginning of our life until we get to the place we are now. Lifelong preparation has to do with the fact that all through your life you have building benchmarks about where you're going to go and what you're going to achieve in your life. And I can look back in my life and I can see the benchmarks. I can see the experiences I had in the military. I can see the experience I had in college and seminary and all that, raising a family. And all of these give you a certain amount of benchmarks for your possibilities that can happen in your life. So lifelong preparation. The next one is preparation from past pains, failures, and successes. And I put these together because this is the emotional package. You know, we are who we are today because of the things that have happened to us, the things that we have self-inflicted, the failures that we've had and successes that we had. I think we learn more from our failures and our pains than we do our successes. All that makes us who we are. And if you've gone through tough times in your life and painful times in your life and failures and you wallow in that without learning the lessons of it, you're never going to see the full potential in your life. And I believe that some of the pains and some of the failures are the best teaching aids we could possibly have. I've learned a lot about what not to do, so I do the right things. And so Preparation comes from our past pains, failures, and successes. They also come from preparation from our environment. We are a product of the environment that we're in. That's why we tell our kids is to hang with the right crowd, not that we're prudish against those other kids. We take on the atmosphere that we place ourselves in. If you're in a group with a bunch of people that want to gossip and backbite and talk about other people, you eventually will become that type of person. If you want to be a person that encourages, that lifts people up, that loves people, place yourself in those environments. And those environments will eventually help you to produce the things that you want to produce in your life. You know, I love sports. I'm a big sports fan. If you're new here, I'm a Detroit Lions fan. Last week, the refs did not help us, and so if you watched some of that game. But I've watched this many times is that so many times teams have that one special person that can achieve the great catch or the best quarterback. But a lot of time, a winning team has to do with the environment that's created. If they're positive, if they're supportive, if they're not talking about each other in the media, they're building a unity, that builds that trust and power in a team. And I believe that happens in every walk of life, is that our environment has a lot to do with preparing us for what we can achieve. Be around positive people. Be around people that encourage you. Be around people that see failures as an opportunity to succeed the next thing. When you do that, that will help you to be motivated to achieve your goals and hit your endless possibilities. And then the next one real quick here I want to give you is preparation of others involved in our possibilities. I believe that God puts people in our lives to make a difference. I think God puts people in our life to help us to achieve, sometimes to correct us, sometimes to chastise us, sometimes to give us, you know, a little challenge, sometimes to say the right things and motivate us, share the love, and when we fail, they're the ones that pick us up. I think God prepares us with the people we have around us for our possibilities. But the biggest one I want to talk about today, and all those things are important, and those are all the basics things that you learn as far as when you want to, you know, achieve something, is your preparation, is divine preparation. Now, this is uniquely different than all the rest of them, because this one really is out of our total control. I believe that God has everybody here for a purpose. I believe that God has a plan for everybody here. I believe that God knows exactly what's going to happen, what could happen based upon how we respond to his divine preparation. And sometimes his preparation is not what you may think it is. I've studied the Bible from cover to cover over all these years, and I learned one thing. God's methods of preparing people sometimes is uniquely different than what we expect in the world we live in. I've gone through defeats, and all these years of pastoring and all this, I've learned many lessons the hard way. I mentioned time and time again, I got two brothers, and my two brothers, I'm the middle child, there's a syndrome for that, you know, I feel sorry for me. But I had two brothers that could do nothing wrong growing up, and I was the one that challenged all of that. And I remember my father and I having big arguments, and I remember the day I turned 17, he signed me into the Navy and sent me off, probably the best thing he ever did. And I went through that times of being scared, alone at 17 years old in the military, not knowing where my life was going, not having any family around. And it was during that time that I felt that divine inspiration, because I had no one to lean on except for God himself. So I've learned the hard ways at times, but divine preparation many times is not exactly what we expect it to be. Now, I've read a lot of stories in the scriptures, and sometimes when you read the stories, if you're not really involved in church, you may read the story and say, this is the most wackiest thing in the world, and there's some stories in the Bible that sometimes come off as kind of weird, like why is this kind of story there? What in the world is going on here? And the story I'm going to read is exactly about that. Let me set it up before we get there. Abraham is the person that God used to establish the nation of Israel. He's many times referred to as Father Abraham. We know the characters in the Bible. We have Noah and Moses, all of them. But Abraham is the one individual that God promised that he would build this great nation in the land of Israel and grow it by multiple numbers. We also know that because of Abraham, we also have the Palestinians or those that are Arabic nations, and that's because he had Isaac and Ishmael. But the one child that God worked through for Abraham was his child Isaac. And Isaac was the apple of Abraham's and Sarah's eye. They were special. He was special to his parents. And God had promised that God was going to build a great nation from Abraham through Isaac to the lineage there for his life. And then God basically, as he's preparing Abraham to do something, he does something uniquely weird. He asks him to do something that's, if you think about it, is not exactly what you expect God to do if God's going to build a great nation in the lineage of Abraham and Isaac. And this is a story I want to read to you, and then I'm going to make some comments about it. Talk about divine preparation is the most important preparation. Sometime later, this is after God has spoken to Abraham's son, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham, here am I," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountain I will show you." Now, this is a weird request because God had already told him, "I'm going to build a great nation through your family and through your heritage." Early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey, and he took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. And when he had cut enough wood to be burnt for the offering, he set out for the place that God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance, and he said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkeys while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you." And it's interesting now, he says, "We will come back to you." I really believe what Abraham was thinking is that he was going to have to kill his son, but God was going to raise him from the dead. Because he says, "Listen, we're going to go up there, and then we will come back to you." So somehow Abraham had trust that God would work this out, even though he had that unusual request to go to the mountain and slay your own son. Verse 6, Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife as the two of them went up together. Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father." "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" And Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went up together, and when they reached the place God had told them about, Abraham built an altar and arranged the wood on it. He bound up his son Isaac, and he laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out to his hand, and he took a knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here am I," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on your boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld me, your son, your only son." And Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. And he went over and took the ram and sacrificed it in a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declare the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sands on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." Then Abraham returned to his servants, and they set off together to Beersheba, and Abraham stayed in Beersheba. Now, once again, it's an interesting story. It's a story about the beginning of the nation of Israel. That's the history lesson there. And how that God said because Abraham was obedient that he was going to be able to see his generations grow and this nation grow beyond the numbers of the sands and the sea. But to find out what his potential was, to find out where he would go, to find out what possibilities he has, God gave a unique situation for him to go through. God has him take his boy up there. His boy is innocent. He's trusting his dad totally, as any boy would do. He gets up there, and God had told Abraham, "I want you to slay your boy on an altar of sacrifice." And he's going through every motion you could possibly do, and right near the end of it, God intervenes and says, "Don't do it." And about that time, this ram came through the thicket, and God kind of nodded to him, "This is the sacrifice I provided for you." But why is the story this way? Why would God do this? Well, it's a lesson, I think, for us to learn how divine preparation works. Divine preparation works many times different than what we might think. And the first thing I think about is divine preparation sometimes comes in the fashion of a test. God sometimes tests us to see what we will do. God doesn't tempt us with things, but God does test us. God many times will put us in a situation or allow a situation to come into us or to see if we will trust him, see if we will have the courage to step up, to see if we will step out of our comfort zone. Many times the whole idea of God preparing us comes in the line of a test. I've gone through it and you've gone through it. And many times it's a crossroads that we don't know how it's going to work out. We don't know what the end result's going to be. We can't see ourselves getting through it, but we know that God has a plan. And one of the best references I use this many times, and this is not a sermon about giving or money and stuff, but I've learned this, is that the Bible talks about money, about giving, not only church or whatever, it talks about being charitable. And I have found that God has said, if you give, I will give it back to you. Double fold, you will not be running out of anything. So anytime I've got to the place where finances are tough and we're struggling a little bit, instead of cutting back in what I'm doing for whether church or ministry or charity or whatever, we step out and trust God and give a little more, knowing that God has a promise for us. It's kind of like a test, I feel, that when I'm going through a tough time like that, I just feel like God's testing me. What will I prioritize? What will I do? Will I become skimpy in what I'm doing for my community? Will I step back from those things? Will I begin to be frightened and fearful? No, I decide, and we've done this all my adult life, let's just pass the test. Let God know we're willing to be out there and be generous in what we do. Many other tests that God will put us through to see what we will do. Another thing that happens, too, is that sometimes God needs to prepare the heart before he prepares the path. If those of us in ministry, when you go and you decide to go to Bible college and seminary, and when you get out of Bible college and seminary, you're an expert on everything theological. You know everything. You can explain everything. You can use the big words, soteriology, eschatology, ecclesiology, and all those words there. And you can impress. And I remember when I was a young man, pastor of my first church, early 20s, I remember getting up and giving sermons that basically were theological. They were structured. I did exactly what they taught me to do in college, is you had your opening, and then you had point A, and then you had Roman numeral 1, all those things there. And I was reading off these things. And I remember that I got frustrated because there was no response. And I thought, folks, I'm the smartest guy in the room now. I got this degree on my wall. And I would speak. And then I would go through battles. And then I would go through hard times. And then at my first church, I had people that find out they didn't like me sooner or later and left the church and broke my heart. And then I had people gossip about me. And then I had people attack me. And then my family went through struggles. Then my kids started growing up and became teenagers. Oh, my goodness, when they become teenagers, every member of the church is scrutinizing the pastor's kids. And by the way, my oldest daughter, I have no hair because of her. I mean, to this day, when I look at her and my little girl, who will be 42 in a couple months, I look at her and I think to myself, this one challenged everything. My son, similar too, he kind of got out of it quick, but he had his challenges too. And every member of the church always was scrutinized. I remember one business meeting where somebody stood up and complained about my daughter and my son in a church business meeting publicly. And now I'm in my 30s now, and I'm trying to, and I started getting emotional. I started learning lessons, and I started, doing those things there. Then I started going through some medical problems and some things. What I'm trying to say here is this. When I first started speaking, I was intellectually prepared. But I was not fully prepared because God, during those painful times, God, during those disruptive times, began to work on my heart. And I found where when I first started speaking, and I would give everybody advice about raising their kids because mine were real little, so therefore they hadn't done anything wrong, but, do the things that toddlers do. And as I got older, I began to cushion my message a little bit, a little more tolerance about teenagers, a little more tolerant about people, because God started changing my heart. And over time, the speaking not only became theological, it became passionate, and it also became a thing to where is I knew what I was talking about, and I actually changed my way of thinking because of the fact I used to be very critical about people, how to raise your kids, until my kids started messing up. And then I began to learn the lessons. And what I learned is that God prepares the heart before he gives you the full path. And I think to anybody in ministry, anybody serving in anything, any Sunday school teacher, children's ministry teacher, teen worker, or whatever, is that when you first get in there, you think you know it all until you begin to deal with a student that's in high school that's talking about suicide, dealing with drugs, overdose. And then all of a sudden you begin to see it's not the mechanical stuff. God had to prepare your heart to be able to get you to your full path. And I think God has to do that. God has to break our hearts sometimes to make us useful, to make us humble. I have a sign in my office of the first song I learned to play on a guitar called Be Humble and Kind. And always be humble and kind, because in all reality, that's the best way to reach anybody. Another thought here is this. Sometimes God's preparation does not always make sense. It doesn't. This did not make sense. You know, I've taught through the Bible all my adult life, you know, in ministry. When I read these stories, I'm sure there's somebody who's not familiar with the Bible and said, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And it is. I mean, why would God tell the guy he loves that he's going to use to lead a nation, I want you to go and kill your son? That seems kind of stinky. There's another word I wanted to say, but I'm not going to say it because I'm on tape. You read that and you think to yourselves, I think it's simply there to show us something there, is that sometimes we think that if I'm going to be successful, if I'm going to reach my full potential, if I'm going to have my endless possibilities, I go step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and there I achieve. But sometimes God throws a wrench into that. Sometimes God does something or allows something that doesn't make sense, but in the long run, it works out for the best, and it even achieves more. And then one more here real quick here. God has the resources, people, opportunity, results all set to go, just waiting for us to trust him. Let me put it all in a package here before I give the walk away. We started off the first week, we talked about the foundation, the principle of the path. And then we talked about potential and what it is. And we think sometimes if I had more money, I could do more things. If I had more money, I could, you know, I could open a business. God sometimes transforms our lives in a different way. And the potential is not always what you think. Sometimes it's the least educated that achieve the most. Sometimes we want kids to go to school, don't get me wrong or anything, but sometimes it's the ones we didn't think would make it show the most potential. I remember there was times when people would say about a teenager in church, they're never going to amount to anything, and they end up achieving some great things. Never underestimate what God can do with an ordinary person. And then passion. Passion, you know, to me, if you have passion for something, it is a driving force. It is emotional. When it comes to the preparation, divine preparation, and all the other preparations is there, when I look at the story there, I come to realize a couple things, and one is this, is that God wanted to do something in Abraham, but God needed Abraham not to depend upon anything else. Now, don't get me wrong, work hard, prepare, study, go to school, all the things you want to accomplish in life. But as a Christian person, as somebody who follows God, I've learned this, is that many times while I'm trying to manipulate the system, I'm trying to work things out, I'm trying to use my own wisdom, I'm trying to do this, sometimes it comes down to this. God sometimes allows things to get kind of messy, so all we can do and stop and say is, God, I am out of resources, I'm exhausted, I have to just totally rely upon you, do something. When we went to buy this building, and some of you don't know the story, most of you probably do have been here, we spent 18 years. We started the church 18 years ago. I thought we would buy our first building the first couple years. But I got to tell you, 18 years is like the wilderness out there. Renting a place every Sunday, setting up and taking down, setting up and taking down, setting up, 18 years. And yes, we started, I did have hair on my head. I did. There are pictures to prove that. And I remember about 5 years into it, getting frustrated, about 6 years into it, getting frustrated. I had this campaign raising money. We raised some money and stuff, and then nothing happened. I remember we would go out to look at building after building after building, and I would get my hopes up, and then, you know, not everybody was on board with it, or it was in the wrong zoning, and they wouldn't do this. Got to about 10 years, 12 years in this, I'll be honest with you, I just finally gave up worrying about it. And so I moved on. I was doing other things. The church was doing good. We had great services. We had, you know, a beautiful place that we rented each week, and there was Scout Hall, great partners and great friends to this day. And I figured, okay, I'm not going to be the pastor that leads us into getting our own building because, you know, I'm getting to that point to where, okay, you get to the point you realize, okay, God, 18 years, I'm in my 60s now, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm getting ready to pass it off, you know, like Moses passed it off to Joshua. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in my house last December, and I'm scrolling through Facebook, and all of a sudden, this picture of this building came up. I scrolled past it. What's that? And I saw it on the market. It was on the market 6-7 years ago. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at it, and I got a hold of the realtor. We walked, 2 days later, we walked in, walked through here, gave an offer for the full price. The whole process got kind of muddy. You know, the banks turned us down to all this kind of stuff there. But I learned this. It was at a time that I had been so prepared not to worry about a building, be more concerned about the people and what we're doing than worrying about that. That's when God opened the door. When I wasn't looking. And after I have given up hope or anything, I knew one day there would be a building. But I had pretty much given to the fact that, you know what, God, I'm not going to worry about it anymore. Not going to worry about it. Not going to try to manipulate it. Not going to constantly get discouraged. It is what it is. It's in your hands. And when you're ready, you're going to do it. And that's when it happened. And the lesson I learned in divine preparation is this. When you don't sweat it, when you don't worry about it, when you give it to God and trust a little bit, that's about the time it's going to happen. That's about the time it's going to happen. And that brings me to the walk away here. Just a simple thing, if you're new with this, that I always give at the close here is this. Divine preparation has one goal, and that is to cause us to rely on God for what our possibilities are. To rely upon God for what's possible. Now, if you're a teenager here, study, go to school, learn all the stuff you need to learn. Go to college, go to trade school, learn, you know, become an electrician, make more than somebody with a master's degree, you know. And all reality is this. And this is the spiritual part of this whole idea of endless possibilities. Trust God. Relax, breathe. In his timing, he has the people, the resources, the ideas, the results all in place. And it's usually when you least expect it that it happens. That it happens. Would you bow your heads for just a moment? This is time to give some thought to what we talked about. In a few minutes, we're going to baptize. We're going to close out with a song with our praise team. But the idea today as we close off this series is I want you to know that your possibilities are endless. Young people, your possibilities are endless. If you're here today and you're a person who maybe is older and you say, well, I'm in my 40s, my 50s, 60s, you know, everything's behind me. No, it's not. There's always, like I talked about last week, there's always what's next. There's always something to do. I talk a lot about my dad. My dad's close to 90 years old, retired from pastoring years ago, and is still going strong, writing books. He's always got something next to do, and I appreciate that with him. So maybe you're here, you got some goals, you got some things you want to achieve, you got some things you want to aspire to, and you've been frustrated. You tried everything. You try to manipulate. You try to work it all out. You try to do all those things there. I want to tell you is simply let God prepare you. And the way you do that is you simply sit back and say, God, I rest in you. I trust in you. I leave it to you. And when you do that, it gives you peace of mind. It will lower your heart rate. It will give you a better perspective. And when he does it, you're going to be so thankful that you just finally stopped worrying about it and gave it over to him. That's divine preparation. I've learned it sometimes the hard way. I hope we all learn it together. I truly do. Father, we're so thankful that we can come together today, Lord. I pray, Lord, you use this lesson along with the last 4 weeks of this talk about possibilities and how that you have so much prepared for us. God, I pray it's been an encouragement to everybody here today. I pray, Lord, that our guests here were encouraged. And God, I pray, Lord, that you would just bless their lives this week. Show them some things that maybe they've not seen before. things, Lord, that they will see your fingerprints on their lives and things that you're doing through them. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen.